When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Silo, episode 3, Machines, is over, but we are just getting started here on post-show recaps. Hello, everybody. Mike Bloom here, back after our big 2-episode extravaganza last week to kick off Silo on Apple TV Plus and coverage therein. We're back for our first installment, and unlike the generator inside the Silo, we are really revving things up in a week that allows us to get to know a lot more of our characters, including our main one, some of the people up above as they go down below, and of course ends in intrigue that presents, as Mayor John says, more questions than answers. Of course, I am not alone here on the Silo podcast. I am joined by somebody who is being hoisted right now to join me to try to keep the lights on here at the Silo recap. Unlike the Silo proper, it is the great Dr. Amanda. How you doing?
I am doing great. We're heating up over here on the Silo podcast, just like a generator that's about to explode, Mike. I'm excited to get into this third episode here. I feel like I have a little bit more of a handle on what's going on in this universe, on who our main character is going to be. So I can't wait to get into it all with you.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking at that pressure gauge that was, you know, the big point of climacticism within our event at the generator. And I'm like, this is an internal look at my schedule back in March when everything was on the same time.
Yeah.
You probably felt the same way with Succession going on, Amanda. Like, what a great representation of mental health struggles that are just redlining it all the time. If only we had a Juliet to come in there and just proverbially hose down everything to make sure it doesn't get red hot.
Yeah. I mean, we're fighting. Sometimes we feel like we're fighting against the clock. The water level is rising. The temperature is rising. But, you know, I have faith that we're gonna bring it in, Mike, and save the day. The Silo depends on us.
100%. Even though every other podcast out there thinks that they're the most important, we're the ones that are getting shit done.
That's right.
Here on the Silo recap. Well, we're happy to have you all on board. Hopefully, again, you checked out last week's big 2-episode kickoff and are joining us for regular coverage. We have introduced a brand new podcast feed in honor of this show. It is our Apple TV Plus podcast feed, which will include coverage of not only Silo, but of course, all the other great coverage we have on this particular streaming service, including Severance, of course, that Dr. Amanda appears on, including Ted Lasso, which is currently ongoing. You can subscribe to that feed at posherecaps.com/Apple TV. I know we dropped this introductory podcast into a butt ton of feeds of shows that, hey, if you like this, you might like Silo. I think we're going to keep doing that for the next couple of weeks, but they're not going to be here forever. So be sure you subscribe to that Apple TV feed to make sure you do not miss on an episode of Silo nor our podcast for the rest of the season. While you're there, ratings and reviews greatly appreciated. Like Bernard, we are all about the numbers here and the favorability ratings, and good ratings and reviews will certainly help boost our credibility a bit there out there within the giant Silo sphere of podcast listeners that is definitely greater than 10,000 people left in the dark. So here we are talking about episode 3. Again, our first regular installment of Silo, I would say, after our, you know, nearly 2-hour extravaganza to begin the series. I was so happy for and about this episode. Obviously, I think one of the big hooks of Silo is the mystery box quality, something we talked about voluminously last week, and something that certainly didn't go away in this episode. I'm sure, Amanda, you're going to have a lot of theories about certain things that may have popped up, certain, you know, statements, certainly a plot point to end the episode that is going to garner some questions. But by and large, compared to the first 2 episodes, this was, I think, the most eventful, yet like the least plot-centric, I would say, from that perspective of it didn't really bring us closer to figuring out, as was invoked in the first words of this series, knowing what the Silo is and who made it, etc. we don't even go inside the water that was, you know, lapping at our heels at the end of episode two. But in exchange, we get to know Juliet Nichols. We really get to know this character who was introduced to us in the final scene of episode one, who we got to know a bit through episode two. And in particular, we find out through various perspectives, why was she Holston's choice at the end of the day? As she herself would profess, she does not know Sheriff's duty from a hole in the wall, probably knows the hole in the wall better because she can patch that up. But I think we began to see a lot of Juliet's personality shine through, and I adore her. I really like Rebecca Ferguson's portrayal of her. There was an AMA done with Hugh Howey a couple of days before Silo premiered last week. And one of the questions asked to him was, what was one of the things you were most nervous about with this adaptation that happily surprised you? And he said, without a beat, it was Juliet, that this character is incredibly complicated, simultaneously stubborn, but also optimistic, who has a sense about, you know, the way she should go about things, yet a lot of trepidation about the way she should go about other things. And he said that Rebecca Ferguson just played the character absolutely perfectly. I can't disagree.
Yeah. I mean, she is really one of these, you know, badass heroines who I think is really, really compelling. I love it when you get to see a woman take this role. It's kind of like Clint Eastwood-esque, like this rough around the edges, you know, playing it like a tight fist, like showing that there's so much depth and emotion there, but also this rough exterior and just imminently competent. And she's so compelling. I think she's going to be really fun to see this world through her eyes. She feels like she's has that same sort of questioning of authority that we saw in the Allison character that we got to know in the first episode. But she also has this history of that she's holding on to, keeping close to the vest. We get a look at who her father is, a little bit of backstory about where she came from, this person born in the mids, even though there's nothing mid about her, and was drawn to the depths below. So I have seen enough of her to be really intrigued, but also enough to know that we're probably going to learn a lot more about this complicated character.
Yeah, what I really appreciate about Juliet is she's different to me than some of the heroines we see in other dystopian post-apocalyptic fiction. I think obviously the closest comparison is going to be like a Katniss Everdeen, right? Of someone who is good at what she does and she's conscripted into this role where she's going to take down the system firsthand. But what I really appreciate about her character is honestly the nervousness with which she approaches a lot of things in this episode. Basically everything except the generator, which she knows like the back of her hand, maybe more so than anybody else, will punch people in the face to get them away from her baby. I think her nervousness of greeting law enforcement, which was seen when she first encountered Marnes and Holston in the last episode, was seen here as well with the Johns and Marnes of it all. It's a different combination, but like seeing her change mood so promptly when in front of different people says so much to me about the character as well as about the world of Silo, which I think gets built out also increasingly in this episode with seeing Johns and Marnes make their way down the Silo, getting to see Judicial admittedly from, you know, a distance, getting to step inside IT, sit in Bernard's office, get to know his weird character a bit more, getting to see this world that Juliet is now in charge of and starts the long journey up. To see her have that impudence, I think, apply to certain ways that she feels comfortable and less so to others ways where she doesn't, honestly, to me, makes the character feel more relatable and rootable than someone who's just like F authority to every single thing they encounter.
Yeah, she's tough, but she's not impenetrable, right? She sits down with Martha and Martha instantly knows like, okay, this is what's going on with you. So it's like she comes in like with all of the kind of bravado, but she's still, you know, it's not an impenetrable armor. You can get through to it. And so I think that that will make this more interesting and more compelling to go through the world, seeing it through her eyes. And, you know, Mike, it's kind of amazing that we have now seen 3 episodes of this show. And I feel like so many of the characters that we've focused on to this point are wiped off the board. So like, I mean, you know, I saw the thumbnail and I see that Juliet is in, it seems to be the star of the show. So I'm looking forward to a few more episodes with her, but at the same time, I wouldn't be completely shocked if like she's gone in an episode or two's time, because now we have Mayor Johns, I think is no longer with us.
Yeah. She's at least dying, if not outright dead by the end of this episode. When blood comes out of your mouth, it's never good.
Not a good sign. No.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I will say the amount of book that this episode covered in Wool took up an entire part. Remember how I talked last week about the way Hugh Howey wrote these series of novels, was that he kind of just like wrote these volumes that ended up getting stitched together into these three novels. And so the entire part about Johns and Marnes going all the way down to Mechanical, meeting with Juliet and then going all the way back up, and then John's succumbing to whatever it was. That was an entire part of the book that was taken care of in one episode. It makes me really excited to see how much and how far we are going to get over the course of this first book. The body count is going to lower. I will say that.
Okay.
This is not going to be like how Lost was initially misremembered as like, well, they're going to kill someone off of the island every episode. It's like Survivor. We're not going to do that. It just... this turnover rate happens alarmingly quickly at the beginning. Juliet's going to be in it for the long haul for Amanda's sake. We don't have to worry about like one of the spare blades from the generator heaving itself 144 floors up and landing on Juliet and crushing her to death.
Yeah. Yeah. When she was underwater, I was like, I don't think I could lose another main character in the show. not yet.
Oh, especially after, you know, poor John's found so much happiness and all that sad sack Barnes left behind.
They never got to have that date, that bottle of wine. It was probably like the after times wine. It wasn't that good.
Well, maybe actually it's not blood that's coming out of John's mouth, but just like some bathroom hooch, you know? She was pre-gaming.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Well, let's actually start our episode with someone getting a little in the pocket as well, in the form of Juliet. So I was actually a little confused at first because of the unique framing devices we had in our last two episodes. Mm-hmm. We are doing things chronologically in this episode, at least. So we kind of did away with the framing device from the first couple episodes. But I thought we didn't at first because we start from where we left off. We actually go head first, right, back down into the depths of this giant sub-basement where Juliet is clinging to a rope. And then like we cut between her hauling herself back up and then her back in her room, just morosely sitting on the ground and drinking and like looking at George's watch, putting it back on, reminiscing. I was confused because I thought, okay, is this a flash forward? Yeah. Is this a flashback? Technically it is, but this is really the only timey-wimey-ness we get in this episode to speak to what I mentioned before about, I think, this being the most straightforward, least questiony part of the three episodes we've had so far.
Yeah. Yeah. That was like, it took me a little while to get oriented to what was happening there, but we basically just kind of have this hodgepodge of Juliet, like pulling herself up from the rope, then sort of drinking her night away. We have some memories of her last day with George. And I think that this is just sort of reflecting her state of despondency and drunkenness as she's kind of processing everything that's happened.
Yeah, so she's going to wake up in quite the stupor the next day by her friend. I'll give her a name. Her name is Shirley.
Thank you for giving her a name because I was really struggling, Mike, with the notes here. Yeah.
I did a lot of hunting around for this because the character's name, I don't believe, is listed in IMDb.
No, it's not.
She's not referred to on the show. Nobody's like, hey, Shirley, bring this pipe over here. I had to check like this random podunk third-party website. And Shirley is a named character. I'd assumed it was Shirley because this is like I would say a good supporting character, one of Juliet's friends that does have some focus within the Wool book, but I wasn't completely sure. You never know with adaptation. They might go the Sims route and like build, not the computer game, the literal character named Sims, which the more I talk about it, the more I realize is different, but like they might build someone out completely. They might pull a Game of Thrones and completely make a character out of thin air. But no, her name is Shirley because at least in the time we're spending in Mechanical in this episode, she's going to be a large focus and seems to be Juliet's closest confidant in the moment. She's
the Laverne to Juliet's Shirley, perhaps.
Exactly. Yes. Shlemiel, Shlemazel. Silo Incorporated.
Yes.
So she's going to essentially rouse her out of her stupor, right? Say like, hey, things are rumbling right now. The generator's no good. If you could just go up and do something about that, that'd be great. For the purposes of discussion right now, Amanda, I think it would make sense to, conveniently enough, perhaps Silo are two separate storylines until they converge. If we get into the Juliet side of things, and then maybe we'll talk about the Marnes and John side of things as they make their exodus down to Mechanical. So yeah, Shaky Cam is going to follow Juliet to the generator where things are amiss, not only mechanically, but perhaps violently as well, as Juliet's going to find her newly sanctioned shadow, Cooper, trying to help this poor kid. And she just punches him in the face to get him away from this very dangerous piece of machinery.
Yeah, bringing a new meaning to shadow boxing here. she punches poor Cooper in the face. And she's like, I mean, this is, she comes to work hungover. She's several hours late, punching somebody in the face. This is not a great start to this day, Mike.
Yeah, and Knox is going to call her out on it. Again, Knox, this big burly guy, is the head of Mechanical. He's going to sit her down in a very important room, not only in this episode, but in Mechanical in general. So this is the control room. This is like the sort of offsite room where they oversee, obviously, the generator, but a lot of other machines at the same time. Lots of literal controls there. And he's going to rebuff her. You know, she's like, how dare you go on and work on my machine without me? He's like, was I supposed to wait for you? The ground started shaking, so I figured I'd throw a wrench at it. And Juliet's going to tell him, you know my rules. And Knox says, your rules? And this is where we get to know a bit about Juliet's comfort zone here down in Mechanical, which is her home away from home, as we'll get to know a bit later. But that she is sort of the generator whisperer. She will literally at one point put her hand on the machine to like feel the vibrations like Tonto did on the Lone Ranger to signify like what the generator is feeling at that point in time. What she's really putting forward right now is an unorthodox idea. Despite, you know, perhaps being shrugged off right now as not being all there, she is sober in her thoughts of this thing is either going to go kaput in the near future, or it could be sustainable in the long future. But for the first time in the silo's history, we have to essentially black out the entire silo to try to fix the problem.
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, she says later that, you know, everybody thinks that their job in the silo is important, but her job is actually the most important job in the silo. We get a sense, like, we understand how important this generator is. If you can imagine, you know, this is the one source of power. Apparently this generator has been running, Mike, for over 140 years.
And they don't know, they know what it's powered by, but they don't know where that power is coming from.
I mean, really, they don't make them like they used to. That's incredible. But you can imagine sort of how precariously everything rests on the sustainability of the power source for this society of people. And Juliet is the person who is the most adept at managing it. And it seems like for a long time now, they've been doing these quick fixes that are sort of band-aids that let them hop from crisis to crisis. And it's only a matter of time before the quick fix doesn't work anymore. And the silo is going, and the generator is going to shut down. And it will be sort of either they can do it on their own terms and try to fix it, or they can wait until that happens. And who knows whether they'll be able to even revive it. Here I noticed, I think I said, Mike, that I thought it was interesting when we saw the Allison's birth control device removed, that it looked, it reminded me of the shape of the silo and what we see in the credits. Now that we see the generator up more closely, I realize that the generator is really that what that iconography is, that it looks like that birth control device did, that there is some, it has like that kind of spiral that mimics the staircase. It spins, it kind of almost has this DNA structure that's somewhat biological, you know, gives definitely this kind of human biology metaphor there. And I think it's really interesting that we have this female character in Juliet that almost kind of has this intuitive connection to it, that there's something like calls it her baby, I think at one point, or we think about this as this connection, that there's seems to be something almost deeply spiritual with Juliet's understanding and her connection to this generator, which is literally life-giving here for the silo.
Yeah, which I think compares really nicely to the fact that so much of this process is going to be rooted in like scientific fact, right? Like Juliet is a mechanical engineer by trade. And I love the fact that her spirituality, both about her trade and to these mechanical objects that don't have life but give life proper, I think is so interesting, right? The intersecting ideals of like faith and science is much more of a Mrs. Davis thing, but it's something that obviously pervades a lot of pop culture. And I think it's a really fun image that we have here of this cold piece of metal, though not so cold if you know, the steam is cordoned off. But the fact that it is inanimate, but Juliet essentially animates it using her own personality, I think is interesting. What I really like about this scene as well, in terms of what it illuminates for her character, is this idea that, yes, Juliet can be stubborn, again, you know, a bit obstinate, but it's only when she believes there's a better course of action. She's not being rebellious just to be rebellious, of like, you can't boss me around, Dad. I'm the one who makes my own decisions. She's saying, like, yes, we have to do this thing that's never been done before just because the system sucks, but because we need to do it to prevent like the worst case scenario from happening. The fact that she pragmatically thinks it through, again, you understand a bit more as to why Holston ended up picking her, is that she is an incredible problem solver. And there's a quote in the book that I will imagine will apply a lot, either literally or figuratively, in what's to come, where when Johns is talking to Juliet in the book about pitching her on the job, she's like, being a mechanic isn't too different from being a ruler up here. You know, just think of each person like a machine part. And it does work in that way, right? I mean, not from like a literal perspective, don't go into anyone's chest cavity with a wrench. But at the same time, this ability to think on the fly, to use that intuition, like you're mentioning, to try to solve a problem and then also think ahead as to like what decisions have to be made, right, what risks need to be taken for the betterment of people for the long term. That is leadership, in a manner of speaking.
Yeah, I think that that's a really interesting analogy of each person as being a unit of this machine. Another way of thinking about it, going back to the whole biological metaphor of it all, I think each person could be like a part of this organism, which is interesting. Like when you think about the organization of the silo, it almost has these organs, right? IT is like the brain. You have the generator, which is like the heart. You know, we have this, the way that it's organized as these levels sort of representing these different functions that are a little bit like organs, that are a little bit like components of a machine. Later we hear, you know, her give the camcorder to Martha and say, you love to figure out how things work. And I think that this is going to be Juliet figuring out how the silo works, like how each of these components in this organizational structure work and learning how to navigate it like a machine.
Right, because the thing about the silo is the design is purposefully, I don't want to use the term segregating because that obviously is a very charged term, but like that's what it is. As we explore the silo over the course of this episode with the other storyline in the first half of this, you could see that it's very clearly divided into sections.
Yes.
And there's a reason why the central apparatus to get around is not an elevator. It is stairs. That is a purposeful piece of design to make sure that people have a tough time getting to other sections and communicating with other people. There's a reason why electronic communications are charged by the character, why it's expensive to write notes, as was talked about back in episode one. Information is controlled in this universe. And so I do think that, to your point, Juliet is an expert of the feet and the heart, I suppose, of the silo. She doesn't know a lot about the rest of the body, maybe more so than her fellow people in mechanical, considering her familial history, as we'll get into. But yeah, like you said, she's about to get a full course in anatomy and taking up the sheriff's position.
That's so interesting, Mike, that you say the thing like, oh, that it's, I mean, obviously that there's something deliberate about, you know, traveling by stairs and let communication and actual travel is made so difficult. Because I'm watching this and I'm like, okay, I have an invention for you. It's two wheels on a board. Like, there's so many ways that this could be an easier path to traverse so that you wouldn't have to take a several days journey to have a conversation with somebody, right, Mike? But that, like, as you point out, is by design.
Yeah, you have to think about it. Yeah, this could be easier. It definitely could. And there's a reason why it's not, which again goes back to some of the ideals that Allison was finding out about, and assumingly our characters will. Though Juliet won't for the time being. I guess the final thing that we'll sort of stop in on before we get to the other side of the story and then the inevitable merge is that Juliet is going to confide in Martha Walker begrudgingly. So, and again, this is what I really love about the character is like Juliet is sitting there frustrated beyond all belief. And like, she doesn't even know why she feels that way, at least initially, until she starts talking it through, mm-hmm. which is her guilt and resentment towards the idea that she couldn't climb down that rope. And I think part of it is this connection to, again, this fear of water that I threw out there at the end of last episode that we certainly saw her confront, maybe not conquer in this episode, but she vocalizes, George left me all these clues and I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. That's what I'm feeling. I'm feeling pissed off. And Walker is going to try to, you know, be that like, I wouldn't say a shoulder to cry on. I think a little bit of like that tough love of, listen, it happens to everybody. You do what you can and you do your best. And Juliet, of course, showing off that impudence that might be attributed to adolescence, will say like, well, you don't even leave your room, mom.
Yeah, she like throws it back in poor Martha's face. Like, I shouldn't even listen to you. You haven't left this workshop in 20 years, which, you know, immediately has you wonder like, huh, I wonder what happened to Martha 20 mm-hmm. years ago. But, you know, clearly there's a reason these two kind of tough around the exterior loners have found each other and maybe bury themselves in machines. But right now, Juliet is full of kind of anger that she doesn't know whether to direct at herself or everyone else.
So while Juliet cools down, so will Marnes and Johns as they'll start mm-hmm. taking sips from each other's canteens as they begin their descent down 144 stories to eventually meet with Juliet. And as I mentioned, along the way, we are going to stop in and see a couple of landmarks, both known and unknown from the silo. First off, is just a brief glance at the mysterious judicial, which will mm-hmm. be talked about a lot, but not seen, which will become a plot point, I think, is John's not making an effort to see judicial here. We'll find out more about the Judge Meadows later on. Something I think that I'll correct myself on is I did talk about how in the books, Sims was seen as more of a heavy of Bernard and IT, and maybe it's my misunderstanding of the text or maybe a change mm-hmm. in presentation. Sims is now more so the avatar for Judicial
right.
in this TV series, which is interesting. Judicial was not nearly talked about as much in the book as it is in the series, which makes me very intrigued because even I am having trouble as to figuring out, like, what do they do?
Right. It's very like, so, you know, we've definitely heard Judicial mentioned in hushed tones several times, certainly by Allison, certainly by George, also by the fertility advisor, Gloria. So, I mean, this is definitely, they seem to be the big bads, right? They're the ones that are mm-hmm. listening. They're the ones that you don't want to know if you have a relic or anything of that nature. It's still very curious to me, and I'm waiting to learn more about this world to understand how Judicial and the mayor's office and the sheriff's office could be so seemingly at odds with one another and not at all, that they would basically be, you know, completely separately operating bodies. Those seem to me like they would be arms of the same unit. So that's very kind of curious mm-hmm. to me. But clearly we get the sense that there's a somewhat adversarial relationship between the mayor and Judicial.
I mean, there's a reason why the mayor and the sheriff's office are on the same floor of the silo and Judicial is not, mm-hmm. right? It seems like, from what I'm gleaning through this world building, Judicial and IT have existed long before like any mayor or sheriff has. And mm-hmm. so I think it's one of these institutions that has kind of been grandfathered in, relied on tradition, and perhaps over the years has continued to extend its control slowly but surely. Not the character, to be able to like seep into having this absolute power wow. over so many things. That's how I imagine the history of the silo was. That, yeah, to your point, on paper, through the pack, perhaps it seems like the actual view that some people think the U.S. government is, which is three separate but equal branches that all like work for and against each other. But it seems much more complicated than that. And that, to your point, even the absolute rulers of the silo through the sheriff and the mayor are like still fearing what judicial might have in store for them.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm very, very curious to see what that is really all about. Like, so far, the only face of judicial that we see is Sims, who, like, again, seems to be some sort of enforcement component of judicial, which is interesting that that could be maybe a separate force that could oppose whatever the sheriff's office is doing. But, you know, we know enough to know that Marnes does not want to be told what to do here by judicial.
So the other interesting finger on this hand that we have to talk about is perhaps the little finger, if you will, in Bernard. So we finally get to stop down with this character a bit more than like the one scene he got in the premiere episode, get to talk more about Tim Robbins' kind of schlubby head here. And I will again,
Tim Robbins' schlubby head.
But I will shout out again, the visual design of this show is so awesome. I love the blue motif. I think in a lot of like post-apocalyptic fiction, and look, Silo isn't necessarily that much different with like how much browns and grays and blacks are theming in terms of its color scheme. So I just love the pop of blue that we got throughout all of IT and most prominently in Bernard's office where they're going to talk.
Right. Yeah. This is very fun to see this character of Bernard Moore. Like I'm very like the judicial and IT, we have a little bit of a window into IT because we spent so much time with Allison in the first episode and now we're seeing Bernard again. But clearly IT has a bigger role in this world of the silo than IT necessarily does in my day-to-day dealings when I need to call somebody because I'm locked out of my email password. I mean, this seems like Bernard seems like a pretty powerful and imposing type of guy, and it's going to take more than a bottle of brandy to completely buy him off here.
Yeah, he's going to report as sort of like a quote-unquote neutral party, right? He seems to have a lot of polling numbers behind some of these possible sheriff candidates, and he is going to push, of course, the judicial candidate of the absentee Billings, even though, again, he claims neutrality. This is just what the numbers tell me. And he's going to say, Paul Billings is the most favorable candidate. And Marnes replies, is that for the silo or for IT? I low-key love like the semi-adversarial relationship between Marnes and Bernard. Marnes will have more snark towards him later on when they're coming back up. But I think it's a very fun like pseudo-rivalry between these two guys who like clearly have both been in their positions for a long time and just do not like each other.
Yeah. No, that's very fun. And these are two really fun performances too. And like, we also learn here from Bernard that Nichols has a reputation that somewhat precedes her. She stole some tape, Mike, but this is like very special tape because it prevents the IT servers from overheating.
Yeah, so this is heat tape. Basically, it's like a duct tape that is meant to withstand very high temperatures. And so he says that Juliet, you know, stole these shipments of tape that were meant for IT and their servers are so important. And without the tape, they would melt down and then all the silos' history would be lost again. But I'm sure if you ask Juliet, like this instance doesn't get brought up here, but I'm sure it'll happen in the future. I'm sure she has her own side of the story, right? Like Juliet is such a Robin Hood type that I wouldn't be surprised if she felt, you know, poor people in Mechanical were like the people of Sherwood Forest who wanted the wealth distributed a bit more equally.
I mean, we can see that there's probably some instances that can happen in Mechanical where there's danger of overheating, right? And there's high stakes. So I'm not surprised that this tape might have been a high value target for Juliet Nichols, but this is like basically enough pretense for Bernard to say that, you know, this is a terrible pick. She's a thief. It's bad news.
And also he puts forward not only that there's one preferable candidate, but that there is a rushed timeline, much like we'll get in the second half of the episode, right? When there only is about 30 minutes on the clock, he says for every day that there is without a sheriff, a 1% chance is added to absolute catastrophe breaking out. So Bernard, you see, is like, in his own way, subtly tightening his own screws, even though he has much less mechanical experience than the person who stole from him.
Right. And, you know, like, obviously the vacancy in the sheriff's office creates, you know, some unrest, which might be a concern. But Mayor John seems to still have the hearts and minds of at least some of the silo inhabitants. He is greeted very, very warmly by a bunch of the inhabitants somewhere around the mid floors.
Yeah, I'm really happy that we used this episode to get to know Mayor Johns. She is the POV for that second part of the book that I mentioned beforehand. And so it's really nice to focus on her and get to know someone who was definitely more on the ancillary in the first two episodes, to really focus on, like, who is she as a leader and why is she so popular? And you can understand why. And you can especially understand why when she inevitably meets Juliet Nichols, she can look at her, see what she's doing, and says, okay, I see a leader. I understand now. Only one person has backed you as sheriff, and now there's two, in myself as well. Like, you see her judge of character, because I think she sees what it takes to be a leader, which is to have that good sense of self and intuition to be able to say, no, 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 I trust my own judgment here. You might be telling me something, but I'm not just going to listen to what the last thing the last person whispers to me is. I'm going to go with my own gut here. And it's earned her a lot of popularity and also allows her to pursue some things like a simple background check with Juliet's estranged father here, named Pete, played by Ian Glenn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the great Jorah Mormont here making an appearance. So, I mean, we understand that Marn's like, she has that great gut instinct that she follows. She also knits a lot of baby blankets, which is undoubtedly part of her popularity here. But she likes to come and visit the babies. And we find out that, you know, the baby delivery doctor here is actually Juliet's father. So maybe Juliet's background is a little bit different than what we would have assumed. Not the typical background of somebody who ends up in the bowels of the silo. She was born the daughter of a doctor in the middle floors, which I'm at this point speculating kind of maps closely onto class, that, you know, where your floor level is an indicator of your station in life in more ways than one. But they had, she had a tough time as a child. We already know a little bit about this from her first person account to Holston. And she had always been interested in machines. And at the young age of 13 years old, she went off and decided to go do the deep down floors and go over to mechanical. And it sounds like they haven't had very much contact ever since then, Mike.
No, because Rebecca Ferguson is, with no offense, considerably older than 13. Mm-hmm. And it wouldn't be surprising if you would assume that they probably hadn't spoken since the day she left. Not only, again, because of these prohibitive measures to, you know, disincentivize people from communicating with each other between floors, but also because Pete assumingly wasn't very happy that if she had lost her mother and her brother, that her father is now, like, left alone in this emotional vacuum while the only tie back to his family has now abandoned him. But it's so interesting to, as you said, get this really surprising facet of Juliet. A, because it speaks to, like, her desire to be there, right? This wasn't something she was born into. This is something she purposely chose, even though, as will be brought up later, like, when she first got down there, she had no idea what she was doing, an environment that she is going to become incredibly familiar with in the present. The fact that she, like, essentially ran away from home, found another family down here, and stayed down here says a lot, I think, about how she looks back upon her own family, but also looking at her own history. I mean, she had 13 years growing up in a very different location of problem solving, but I think still flexing some of those similar muscles, right? In a triage ward, so many things can happen during the birthing process. And so even though I think Pete is more speaking about, like, her mechanical know-how from a young age, I have to imagine through just, like, being in the orbit of her father for so many years, she probably gleaned a good amount about, like, how to approach a situation with a cool head, how to, you know, think through all the possibilities.
Right. I mean, and I, you know, we don't know, like, I mean, we would imagine that a doctor in the silo would have like a considerable amount of like stature and community leadership. So this was probably, this was possibly a family that was looked to as sort of the leaders in the community.
Remember the lottery system, right? That birthings are hard to come by. So when the rarity ends up happening and someone does give birth, like those are very trusting hands that you're put into.
Right. I mean, and babies are so like prized in the silo that the mayor hand knits baby blankets for each and every one of them. Like this is obviously, this is the future of their community in lots of different ways. You know, we saw that how Juliet feels herself responsible for the life of the inhabitants of the silo in terms of keeping the generator running. But then the other generator of the silo is the baby making apparatus, which is tightly controlled and everybody knows about it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the mayor comes to visit all the babies in the nursery. So this is really central to the rhythm of this society. And Juliet has kind of been in the center of these vital functions at all points of her life.
Yeah. So whether she realizes it or not, like she was kind of fated for this position, right? Considering how much her background just lends to her being at the heart of all of this. One final piece of John's and Marin's before everything converges in the deep down. They're going to be at the veritable silo rainforest cafe, it seems. And they're going to be served up a dessert they do not want in the form of a tasty looking strawberry tart from Sims, who is trying to sweeten the very bitter message that he is trying to communicate to John's here, essentially of like, hey, Judicial was pissed that you didn't stop in and say hi, and we really encourage you to go with our pick here.
Yeah, that did go over really, really poorly. That was not as smooth as Sims wanted it to be, that hand delivery of the strawberry tart, which did look quite tasty. I was surprised that not even Marnes was like going to partake in that, but maybe it was poison. I don't know. We do have somebody vomiting up blood later in the episode. So
I have to look at everything they ate, everything they touched. Yeah. You never know where the poison could be. We got to go full knives out here.
Right. So, so this does not go over well, even though the setting is lovely. I would want to be, I like of all the places in the silo, you obviously want to be in the Rainforest Cafe. It's much nicer than the one that I went to in the Menlo Park Mall growing up. So he starts pushing the Billings nominee for sheriff, and they, you know, bristle and just reject his offering. So I think that Judicial is going to have to take another tack if they want to get their way.
Yeah. And we'll see, you know, how far they get. I mean, Sims certainly has, I think, the image of like someone that can really rough you up, and the only image we get of Judicial besides him are like these guys wearing those textbook gray big heavy coats that look like they could beat you up in an alley and everyone would turn a blind eye to it. So they are possibly able to exact some justice in a number of ways should they need to.
Yeah, so I mean they might, if the carrot or the strawberry doesn't work, maybe they're gonna go for the stick.
Well, we're going to need some sticks to poke at the problem that's happening in the generator, as Johns and Marnes happen to arrive right when things are at their most calamitous. The generator is more on the fritz than it has ever been before, as Juliet is going to, as we mentioned before, like Avatar-esque connect with the generator and figure out exactly what is going on here. And so the two people that are in charge of the silo just happen to be here as all of this is going down and realizing, you know, how perilous everything is, as Marnes will talk about later, right? Giving him a better appreciation for what he has in the moment. What's also interesting is while they've kind of been, you know, shown off while they solve the problem here, Johns is going to make some time visiting with an old friend in the form of Walker. Again, this is something that was not in the books, but I love it, especially with the gender swapping of the Walker character, to like have them be old friends who reconnect again, I think is very fun.
Yeah. It really makes you interested to know more of, you know, what is the backstory with both of these characters, that they have this history together, like maybe Mayor Johns or maybe Martha like had some, you know, history being in a different station than the one where they end up now. But you know, this is one of Mayor Johns's confidants here, somebody that she trusts, and she asks for the report on on Juliet Nichols. And it sounds like she has raved. This is a positive reference here for her employment as sheriff.
A couple of other little tidbits about Walker that really color this great character in a fun way. First, we find out that the radio she has is definitely illegal. Again, speaking towards those forms of communication, being restricted, radio and listening into, in particular, the police and mayoral broadcasts are not allowed in the silo. Those are private channels. The other thing is perhaps we get a reason as to why Walker has been a recluse for the past 20 years. Johns will talk about her late partner.
Yeah.
And she'll speak about, you know, losing her that number of years ago. I mean, maybe it's a bit too simplistic to just put two and two together here, but my assumption at the moment is like she lost her partner probably in some tragedy filled way because this is Silo, or maybe it was just another episode of Silo where someone seems to die every hour.
Well, and didn't you hear she chewed with her mouth open, Mike? That was what it was. It sounds like she
got sent to cleaning for chewing with her mouth open.
No, it sounds like it was a breakup though, and not a death, because she says you and Kara were a good couple. What happened? If what happened was Kara died. It sounds like this was more of a conflict or something that tore them apart. So I'm obviously interested in how that happened, because Martha is definitely not going to be candid about it here. So there's something to hide. And that's interesting that she has the illegal radio here that we find out about. But later she, you know, seems to be somewhat hesitant about taking other contraband in the relic that Juliet offers her.
I mean, it's a little bit of the law being on a spectrum, right? Of like, okay, that something's contraband, I think, is different than the relic, which really does seem like we're getting to know more and more like the most taboo of taboos.
Right.
There's a reason why, again, Allison explored like this piece of history that seemingly was wiped out. Any sort of reminder from the before times or anything in that intermediate is a setup for like automatic cleaning or sending to the mines. They just do not want any mention of it. If you're creating something in the present that may not be the most legal, maybe they'll give you a slap on the wrist. So I think it just goes to show like the weighing of priorities that a judicial might have.
Interesting.
Discover why critics are calling Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes the best film of the franchise.
What a wonderful day!
It's a jaw-dropping spectacle that demands to be seen on the biggest screen possible.
I need to go.
Hang on. It is our time.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Now playing only in theaters. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Hey, Drew Scott here. And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price, and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
So Juliet is finally going to be able to sit down here with Johns and Marnes, as Johns is going to put forward what we've known about since the end of last episode, that Holston has recommended a replacement, and it is Juliet. And of course, Juliet's going to outright say no.
First, she's very confused, because like nobody saw this coming. This
yeah,
is
and
like
she
a
only
wild,
met this yeah. man one time a year ago.
And she was just spending, you know, the last 24 hours cursing him out. So it is a surprising turn of events. But when they finally produce the sheriff's badge and show it to her, she sees something that has her intrigued.
Yeah. And so she is going to at least pitch it to the rest of her mechanical people, right? Which includes Knox, which includes Shirley. Cooper has been able to worm his way in there. I love Cooper so much. I was had half a mind to think, because again, of the body count of this show slowly amassing, of like when they were up in the rafters of the generator, if there was a chance that like he'd take a tumble, or even worse, get his poor little cute head get taken off by one of those rotating blades and not be able to get out in time.
Yeah. No, Cooper's at least survives this episode here. Yeah, I love he's like just so sort of starstruck by Juliet, even though Juliet literally just punched him in the face. Deputy Hank, you know, is obviously thinks very highly of Sheriff Holston. That was the reason he became a deputy. So people are, you know, is sort of encouraging this is a good opportunity. And that's when I think it's Hank that notices that something's carved in the back of the badge.
Yeah.
And that is what that leads Juliet to change her mind and run off to catch up with Mayor Johns to tell her that she will take the job, but she has a condition.
One condition: she cannot leave mechanical until she fixes the generator. And that is going to include finally this provision she's been putting forward to be satisfied: a mandatory shutdown of the generator that runs the silo for the first time in apparently the silo's history, to give an 8-hour period for them to work on it. Of course, Johns is absolutely astounded. People will be terrified. Juliet simply replies, people are going to be terrified when the motor shatters and we live in darkness forever. And look, not to compare it to our own day-to-day, but it does like remind me a bit of a conversation around like overhanging cataclysmic events that may eventually claim us all, right? Of like, okay, well, you could put a bunch of band-aids on it now to try to solve the problem, or we could just like make a sacrifice, you know, temporarily stop one large part of our lives if it means making things better for the future. And it's no wonder why we chose the former.
Right. I mean, this is a metaphor for political trade-offs on almost every scale. Like, I'm talking to you today, Mike, on the day that my kids go back to school in a building where they did an emergency remediation for asbestos, and there's a huge political debate in my city over whether we just invest in fixing the schools so they're not toxic, mm-hmm. or if we continue to jump from emergency closure and remediation to emergency closure and remediation. And that's this constant balancing between what might be in the short term a little bit more expensive or uncomfortable or take a little bit more political capital and doing what in the long term is going to be the best solution for everybody. So this is essentially the type of decision that mayors and sheriffs and people in power have to make. And Juliet's saying, you know, I'm going to put my foot down and say, this is what is best for the silo. And we have to do this or else we're just waiting for an impending disaster. And the mayor, I think being a good leader that we see at this point, is going to support her. And this episode, you know, probably our last episode with Mayor Johns, unless something very surprising happens. I didn't really know what her leadership was, if she was going to be one of the kind of unnamed shadowy bad guys, or whether she really was a leader whose heart was in the right place and was trying to do what's best. And I think we see a lot of instances in this episode that she was not only popular, but also a great leader in many respects. And and these two together, it's like, it's nice to see, you know, these two girl bosses getting on the same page and making this decision to do probably make the needed repairs to the generator.
Yeah, what I really appreciate about Johns as a leader is her capacity to listen. That, yes, as we talked about, she does have this sense of independence to like rely on her own gut. But at the same time, if someone who is the de facto expert on this generator is saying there is a long-term solution to this, which means a short-term sacrifice, like, she will take her word for it. She knows there are no ulterior motives here, unlike Sims, unlike Bernard. Right. And I think it's that honesty, that candor, that I think really speaks through from Juliet to Johns and allows Johns to back Holston's choice at the end of the day. I think, like you said, it is an unfortunate instance of like two ships nearly passing in the night, because it seems like Johns is literally passing as the episode concludes. Like, what could have been with the two of them in charge? But it does serve that, if Johns does indeed die, an interesting passing of the torch,
right?
And like, this is the capacity of what it takes to be a leader, and you already have it, you just don't know it.
Yeah, and it's neat that that has kind of been the theme of these first three episodes, of this kind of passing of information, of leadership responsibilities. We see with George and Allison and Allison and Holston, and eventually Holston and Juliet, and we have Mayor John's here, that like there's this kind of human spirit of in this search for truth, which is going to be the word that's carved on the back of the badge, that, you know, if we can just sort of pass on this quest for knowledge, even if an individual character cannot fulfill that journey, maybe this whole arc of the society can bend towards that.
So we're going to veer a bit in the rest of this episode, as it's definitely going to be the most like pulse pounding the season has been up to this point, but it's really only going to focus around one central location in the form of this generator, as the mechanical team is going to like Ocean's 11 this shit. Right? They're going to talk through exactly what's going on. Juliet spins the top and Leonardo DiCaprio points at the screen. And she talks about how essentially it seems like one small thing is out of whack within the spinning rotor blades of the generator, which has just gotten even more out of whack over time. It can lead to calamitous results. So essentially what the big plan is again, as we said, there's this mysterious source of steam that is powering the turbines that eventually make the generator work. They're going to cordon off that steam, get in there, try to fix the blades, and then try to, you know, let the steam back in without letting things get too hot down there, or else it's just all shot to sunshine, perhaps quite literally. And we're going to say goodbye to sunshine as we undergo an 8-hour power outage up above. And I thought this was just such a well-done sequence of getting to see the very invigorating aspects of like Juliet's action hero moment and, you know, almost like dismantling a bomb, right, in terms of the timing of it all, contrasted to like everyone up above just sitting still purposely. So right, like they are sectioned off into their homes or into these communal areas where they can't go anywhere until the power turns back on. And to get that lack of motion and like the stirrings therein combined with this poor mechanical team like throwing themselves up and down these decks and like nearly getting crushed by 2-ton blades, I think was a really nice contrast to each other.
Yeah, it's like what Knox said after Halston's cleaning. You know, they can argue up there about the political consequences and who will be sheriff, but down here we have something real to do. We are the vital lifeblood of the silo. And here you see when everybody else can sit in their safe zones with their blankies and hope that everything's okay, that we have this incredible heart-pounding sequence of everyone in mechanical, all hands on deck. Even Cooper is going to rise to the occasion.
Even Cooper, and
it's incredible, you know, with the temperature rising and the water level rising and everything that needs to happen for them to act in the clutch here and pull it out and save the generator to save the silo. I do want to point out, because you mentioned, you know, the Leonardo DiCaprio meme of pointing on the screen when she spins the top and gives her speech about one small thing, knocking it off course. And then, you know, over time, it's never going to be right. It makes you wonder, like, what is this metaphor for the organization of the silo or whatever is happening? Like, what is the one small thing that has gotten this world off course so that, you know, now we have this world under this society living underground, hiding from the outside? You know, is this going to be the fix that we needed for the generator? Is that ultimately going to be an analogy for something that's needed to correct the course of this dystopian society? So I'm on the alert for finding what that might be.
Well, speaking of alert and small details, Amanda, did you notice something when the view screen turned off up in the cafeteria on the top level?
Yes, we had this momentary flicker of the display screen as the power is shifting from the main generator to the backup, where for just a moment and blink, you would miss it. You see, instead of this dark, dystopian, toxic looking gray landscape, the beautiful, lush green trees with birds flying in the air, exactly as Allison had described, exactly as we see through Halston's eyes when he goes out to clean. So is there a filter, an Instagram filter on
the worst filter ever
on this on the sensor that for a moment turned off and we got to see the outside world as it really is?
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's one of the few questions that ends up popping up in an episode that brings more answers than questions. Mm-hmm. And what's also interesting is, I mean, it makes sense because, again, this is the first time they are ever doing this. So those that may have designed this view screen probably didn't program any sort of failsafe for, like, if the view screen turns off, because they had assumed if it does turn off, then we are in a load of trouble anyway. And so what does it matter for? The other question is, there were a good smattering of people within that cafeteria. How many of them do you think saw that brief glimpse?
Yeah, I was waiting to see reactions or consequences or fallout of, you know, that flicker to see if we could read it on anybody's face. I mean, we do see the crowd there, and there are clearly some people who would have been able to see it. I think in the moment, we're supposed to assume that everybody is so tense about the situation and what's happening with the generator. And this is so unusual that we're not having like an immediate riot, like anybody standing up and saying, what the hell is that? You know, that there's this sense of sobriety around the gravity of what's happening with the generator fix. But yeah, I would be surprised if we don't get some mention of this in the upcoming episodes.
It's tough, though, because if you think about the concept of gaslighting, like, there's a very simple reason why anyone who did see it could simply think, like, well, listen, the lights were going out, my eyes were probably having trouble adjusting. I thought I saw it, but maybe I didn't. Like, I could feel like, if people aren't communicating with each other, if you're an independent person who sees this, you would be very easy to delude yourself, especially given what you're usually used to seeing on that view screen, to thinking like, yeah, my eyes must be going or something, because I could have sworn that sky was blue.
Right. And then, like, it also made me wonder, is there going, like, it maybe if the unwashed masses are not the ones who are going to have seen this, like, could there be somebody in judicial or IT who recognizes that this happened and sees this as an ulterior motive of what Juliet was doing? Like, there might be a reason that there's so much alarm around turning off the generator and going to backup, and could this arouse suspicions in the powers that be, the people who are invested in keeping up this mirage? So yeah, I was waiting to see if there was going to be any payoff of that in this episode, and there wasn't. So maybe it was just another nod to the audience to say, yeah, that thing that you thought you saw last episode, that really was what it looks like outside. Remember that. That's still part of the show. It could have served that purpose, but maybe there's going to be something more that has an impact on the characters, and I'm really curious to see what that might be.
Well, let's talk about a payoff that does happen in this episode. Something very lightly teased that I pointed out in but a gesture back in the first episode during Allison's cleaning. But we check in on Marnes and John, who seem to be situated, I think, in one of the mid sheriff stations. It seems that they kind of stopped up halfway through. All the other police officers are out patrolling over the course of the night, making sure that, you know, nobody strays from their homes. And so John's is going to walk in, hair down, ready to go. Uh-huh. And she says she can't sleep, and Marnes is going to say, then don't. And as they're overlooking the silo, Marnes is going to wax profound for a guy that seems to, you know, be a fairly simple man of few words, to more so sketch things out rather than, you know, be verbose. He will surprisingly open up here, talk about how, you know, we've always been one catastrophic failure from the end of it all, and this just makes me more conscious of it all. Maybe that's not a bad thing. Makes you appreciate the day ahead. And Johns is going to talk about this idea of bringing Juliet up makes me feel better about retiring. She will retire, I think, in a very different way at the end of this episode. No. But at least in the moment, she has an idea of what she would want to do. Maybe set up a market stall next to a guy that may be similarly retired and just selling his drawings for dirt cheap. And they're going to admit something to each other, despite it being dark. You know, the lights are going to come on for these two as she's going to say, you know, I didn't come all this way just to meet Nichols. I wanted to spend time with you. And Marnes says, I know it's why I came. And they're going to kiss. And it's growing red hot on the steam hatch.
Oh, yeah. Temperature's rising. Well. Yes.
I'm really intrigued to hear this from your perspective, Amanda, because in the book, again, I said Johns is the POV character. And so with having access to her inner thoughts, you know her feelings about Marnes from the first step they take.
Okay.
That in the book, Johns is a widow. And so she had felt like, while she definitely had these feelings for Marnes, she always felt like she was betraying the ghost of her late husband in taking up some sort of affair. They also do eventually, you know, reconcile in that way, the way these two do here. Now, I know perhaps I spoiled it for you a bit in like talking about that gesture, but did this come out of nowhere for you? Did you feel like this was deserved?
Oh, I mean, I thought that this was very sweet and it fit with these characters. I mean, they seem to have an affection and a respect for one another from just their very early scenes. So it's not surprising that, you know, at some point, you know, they could have this kind of growing, more romantic affection. So it, I thought that it played, you know, very believably for me. I thought that it was really sweet. And the second that she paints this like lovely retirement picture of them, you know, side by side in their market stalls, I was like, oh no, this is just too sweet and precious for the show to let them have it. Something tragic is going to happen to one of these two. But I thought that it was lovely and sweet, and it didn't seem to come out of left field or anything. It also makes sense that for somebody like Mare John, she would want to wait to sort of see the, you know, the progression of like have in mind, you know, that things were stable enough for her to imagine retiring before thinking about taking up an affair with somebody else who could be, you know, perhaps a subordinate of hers. So the idea that this would happen as they're thinking about retirement, it was sort of sweet, but I also did think that it was a little bit the mention that, you know, that they walked down there not principally to meet Juliet but because they have crushes on one another did seem to kind of detract from what was probably a pretty important thing to do.
Yeah, like, I'm just imagining, you know, mm-hmm. Pete Nichols talking about like, well, Juliet did all this, and Mare John's just daydreaming about Marnes and not even listening the entire time.
Oh, she's like, oh, who cares about the future of this silo? Doesn't Marnes look dreamy today?
Yeah, here are my notes about Juliet from Bernard. Marnes' eyes are like two deep pools.
Yeah. But I love a sweet, mature romance on a television show.
I was about to say, like, I adore the, you know, December romance that are these two. Yes. Because again, there's not a lot of backstory in the show, but you can tell that these are some people who put their professional lives usually over their personal lives. Mm-hmm. And so we want to see them have some happiness, as mm-hmm. short-lived as it is. And I do think this idea of, in all this calamity recently of Allison's departure and then Holston's departure, trying to like recalibrate yourselves, having Juliet serve as like this stable force of, mm-hmm. okay, she's a little unorthodox, but we know the silo feels pretty good in her hands, I think does give them an ability to, as Johns does, let their hair down and be like, now I can finally look outside of my own professional qualifications and like be able to act upon some feelings that I have had for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, what might have been between these two crazy kids.
So we got things going on down in the generator. I want to flag the Rebecca Ferguson accent moment of the week. For me this week, it was her production of Rotoblades, which just came at the end of one of the various things that she was shouting out.
Yeah.
So she's going to come up with this big wackadoo plan because the vent on the steam pipe is just getting absolutely hot. If it gets too hot, again, the chamber explodes and then everyone dies in general. Game over. Nobody wins. So Juliet is going to conquer a fear of hers in more ways than one. I love the image of her sliding down the rope in the first place to do something that she couldn't do in the waters of the sub-basement, as she will get very, very wet when she didn't before. She's going to grab this fire hose, jump down into the tank, and essentially spray down this little vent to cool it down enough to allow them to have enough time to replace this blade.
Yeah. I mean, so in the urgency of the moment, she, you know, overcomes this fear and decides that, you know, she's the only one who can do it. Coop is the one who's going to have to stay up there and eventually replace the blade when it has been when it's been fixed. She's going to go down and spray the water to cool the temperature so that we don't have an explosion. And I was really worried, Mike, that she would be down here and it's not only the water level rising, but I was wondering about the temperature and the steam. Like, could she be burned by this?
I mean, she does touch the side for 1 second and it scalds. I guess surprisingly not bad enough that she like immediately needs to get treated for it, though I guess mechanical is this idea, right, of just slap a band-aid on her, you'll be fine.
Right. I mean, she's definitely tough. I wonder if all of those, you know, tattoos or whatever, she's built up a pain tolerance. So, you know, we have this very compelling, tense scene where, you know, the fire hose is working, it's cooling it, Knox is up there monitoring things, but because the temperature continues to rise, she has to stay down there until she is completely submerged and Teddy can't get that blade straightened quickly enough.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, this is a ticking clock in more ways than one. Now it just doesn't come down to the pressure gauge. Now it comes to like Juliet's ability to breathe. And any fear she conquered in hopping down there is then brought back up to the surface as like now she is drowning underneath this tank.
This is not graduated exposure therapy. This is not the recommended course for facing your phobias.
I mean, luckily she has enough strength to like pull herself out of the tank without even needing to clutch onto the fire hose that they haul her up during. Cooper is also able to surmount the courage to be able to like put the blade in place just in the nick of time. And due to the fantastic efforts of Mechanical, the day is saved. The lights come back on. I really like this one effect where it seems like there is this like giant bulb at the roof of the silo. And there are all these, from what it looks like, mirrored surfaces around it to help reflect the light back down.
Yeah. It looks very, because it almost gives the effect that you're like seeing up, like you're like looking at the sky, but of course you're not. So the design is really interesting. And like I said, I think that we've already started to see it mirrored in other artifacts within the silo.
So we're going to see goodbyes and hellos being shared. Juliet is going to say farewell to the people of Mechanical, right? Her prerequisite was checked off. Therefore, she must be on her way all the way up to the top to become a sheriff. And I loved how in character these were. That these were not overly sappy and sentimental. These were her friends, her family down there since she was 13. But Juliet is not necessarily the character, especially at this point in time. This is a post-George Juliet who is very caged off. I think she will let the right people in at the right time. But I still think that like she is someone that does not necessarily want to show affection, I mean, to the people that she's closest to, because that's admitting to weakness. And so we see here in her scene saying goodbye to Walker, right? We're like, Walker is going to reveal that actually she knew about her romance with George because George had actually come down and told her that she essentially did like the stern dad talking to of like, hey, I have a ticket. There is no ticket. Stay away from my daughter. But that Juliet is going to do this kind of like awkward goodbye. And then she's going to stop. And while Walker's back is literally turned, like nuzzle herself into it. It's very animalistic, right? We're like, she's not communicating verbally. She's communicating through her body language, which I think is even more emotional.
Yeah. We also like learn that she hasn't left Mechanical since she got there when she was 13 years old. So, you know, these are her people. This is her place, but there's a lot that she has shut off to kind of continue to exist. And now she's being pulled away from this place that has been a home, these people that have been friends and safe spaces for her. And I think that the word is exchanged. I think it's Shirley who says you have some stuff to face up there. Mm-hmm. So like you said, she's carrying all of this. She's still pretty buttoned up. There aren't wordy goodbyes here.
Yeah, even her closest friend in Shirley, she's like, yep, thanks. Talk to you
she's
soon.
Like, you never said my name once in the whole show.
Do you even know my name?
Because I didn't. But, you know, like there's a lot of affection that you can see, but it is very kind of subdued. And I'm really curious to see, like, who is this woman who has not faced the place that she came from in over a decade and is now going to be thrust into the very center of this whole society?
And I think it compares really nicely to what ends up happening with Johns in a larger capacity of, okay, you have lived in this world for so long, you were able to like get one big thing accomplished, and then you feel like, okay, it is time for me to move on. Mm-hmm. Now, listen, mm-hmm. I don't think Johns, if she is going, would want to go in this way
right.
in particular, but I do find it fitting that we contrast, you know, Juliet saying, I was able to finally finish the one thing that I have been pushing for years. Now I'm ready to step into this, you know, brand new world, move mm-hmm. on in a manner of speaking, with what happens with Johns, where she and Marnes have a little bit of a pep in their step as they're coming back up. They're going to rebuff Bernard, who just comes up like, blah, 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 the servers were off. What happened? Yeah. And so they basically say like, F off Bernard. This is what we had to do. We had, and you know, he's obviously very disconcerted about the fact that the thief, so-called, mm-hmm. is being recommended for the sheriff's position. And yeah, it was too good to be true. As you mentioned beforehand, Johns and Marnes are going to marinate on what ended up being their first trip together as a couple. She is signing some documents and says that she isn't feeling well. She's going to, you know, tidy herself up in the bathroom as Marnes finds a nice bottle of wine for a drink that mm-hmm. will never be shared. He calls wow. out to her about something. Mm-hmm. She does not respond. He bursts his way into the bathroom to find her convulsing on the floor, blood pooling out of her mouth. He shouts for help. End episode. And I love the structuring of like taking us into that anxiety around the generator and then having us calm down, like, okay, it got restarted, everything will be fine, and then pulling the rug out from under us right at the last second.
Yeah. And, you know, this is, you know, you said that this episode gives, you know, some answers. And but this is a big question for me is, you know, obviously I suspect there's some foul play involved here in whatever happens to Marnes. People don't usually, you know, vomit blood for no explicable reason here.
Is that your official medical diagnosis?
I'm not an expert in blood vomiting. So that's my lay. That's my lay opinion here. Don't take that one to the bank. But yeah. So, I mean, she's out of breath and you can think, okay, you know, that she's just walked up and down 140 some flights of silo here. But I can't think of what could be the inciting incident of this sudden bout of deadly illness. And I'm very skeptical. We did run into Bernard, who was none too happy. We, of course, ran into Sims on our travels. We did not eat his very attractive strawberry tart. So that's not the inciting incident. But I'm like very curious about what could be going on here, if there's something broader. And it's interesting to think that this could be something that would potentially activate Deputy Marnes to be more skeptical of things than he might have otherwise been. I don't know where that is going. But certainly Juliet, who is now, you know, newly drafted into this pursuit of truth, which is what's written on the back of her new badge. Is she going to wonder what happened to Mayor Johns? So, yeah, this to me opens up a big question. And I know that you have, as a book reader, Mike, might have some more insight into this incident than I do.
Yes, but I will remain mum for the time being, just because there might be some background details that might yeah. allude to it. There might be stuff that gets brought up in the next episode. What I do find interesting is that we are sort of hopping from one murder mystery to another, right? Mm-hmm. And episode 2 was all about, okay, was George murdered or did he die by suicide? And now this episode, we're sort of replacing one body for another. And the person who is going to be in charge of said investigation happens to be the newly appointed sheriff.
Yeah.
And the irony that comes in Juliet thinking that, okay, a new normal has been established, in Johns and Marnes feeling like we can retire, a status quo has been returned to, only to realize that this show is not going to have a status quo,
mm-hmm.
it seems. Every time it feels like we are settling into something, then another rumbling is going to happen and those rotor blades will never get back into sync. So I'm really happy, honestly, three episodes in. I feel like it has been moving at such a frenetic pace, but I feel like this was such a necessary episode where, again, it didn't focus so much on the George of it all that really got sidelined in honor of getting to know Juliet, specifically find out her background and what makes her uniquely fitted for the sheriff's position. I think by the end of the episode, there is a case to be made, as is represented by John, as to, okay, now we understand why Holston recommended her, what he saw in her, if at least partially also due to the fact that, you know, he found out stuff that she could possibly use as closure for George. And we got some fun action on top of it, which I didn't expect to happen in a show like Silo. Again, because this part of the book was from John's perspective, we had the conversation with Juliet, but they don't talk about, and Juliet took a fire hose and dove into the steam tank. Like, all of this from her perspective was not written down. That's what I love about adaptation, is their ability to say, okay, because of the way this story was told, we weren't able to get this perspective. Let's elaborate on it. And so I was really excited by this episode, and three episodes in, I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying it too. Knowing that this whole scene with the silo repair, the generator repair, is something that was added in the adaptation. I love that because, first of all, it created a really fun action scene of television. When I think back of this episode, I think I'm going to think, oh, that's the one where Juliet fixes the generator, which is really exciting. It gave us insight into the way mechanical works, which might be different than the way other departments in the silo works. And knowing that that is Juliet's background and that's the type of community and the type of working relationship that she's used to, that's her style of fitting into a group and being a leader, I will be very surprised if we don't see how that plays out now that she's sheriff. So I think that that is a really interesting nugget to get by way of her story. And now we also know, you know, that Holstein not only left Juliet the sign that he promised in the message on the back of her badge, but that, you know, her assignment to this role, this is not only her sign, this is also her mission, right? Holston is essentially saying, you inherit the mission of finding out the truth. And this is the mission that Holston, you know, that he inherited from Allison, and that, you know, George in some way, all the, and that Juliet's inheriting from George, and they're kind of carrying on that work. So I'm really excited to see where this goes.
Yeah. So next week we shall get to the truth, because that is literally next week's episode title, Truth. So we are going to see Juliet brandish the badge that has that word carved into the back of it. And she'll be looking for a lot of it, as not only is she assuming a brand new position and all the duties therein, but she has a first case almost immediately, perhaps, in the at least attempted murder of John's. We shall see what happens. In the interim, Amanda, you've got your plate full, cafeteria style, with plenty. Your lights are proverbially on from a podcast perspective. What's been going on with you?
Well, I am covering Succession for post-show recaps. I'm doing deep dives with Grace. I'm one part of the excellent team that is bringing you all the Succession coverage you could possibly want. We just finished a very exciting episode 6, which had a lot of, there's a lot that we're going to unpack. Grace and I are going to be joined on the deep dive this week by the great Alexander Skarsgård Chester, who will be talking to us.
You had me in the first two names, not going to lie.
Josh got to talk to Alexander Skarsgård, but we have our own Alexander.
With no offense to Alexander Skarsgård, the way Mattson has been putting me off so much this season, like, there's like 10% of me that's like, I don't know if I want to talk to him, you know? Like, how much Mattson is he going to bring into this conversation should he be on that?
No, he's done an incredible job at making himself seem like a complete creep. But we're talking to Alexander Chester of the 32 fans fame, who is not
Was that the number of blades in the generator was 32 fans?
There were 32 fans spinning and one of them was off kilter. That was the issue. So keep up with everything that I'm doing by following me on Twitter, where I'm at Dr. Amanda R. That is Dr. Amanda R.
And of course, you can follow me at A Mike Bloom Type. I mentioned it beforehand, Mrs. Davis. We are rounding the corner, penultimate episode of Mrs. Davis season one coming out on this Thursday. Of course, at the time this podcast is being released, that episode and that podcast will already be out. Other than that, I'm also covering Barry, which has settled into a very new groove for its final four episodes. I will just go that far covering that with LaTanya Starks. And of course, everything else happening at post-show recaps. I, again, will encourage you all to subscribe to our new Apple TV Plus only feed, postshowrecaps.com/Apple TV. That feed will soon be filling up with lights of other podcast coverage of things like Severance, which is doing its monthly media club, as well as Ted Lasso's final season. It's all going to be housed in that one particular place. Any ratings and reviews are, of course, greatly appreciated. But that's going to do it this week for the Silo recap. Again, we have the ability to record these recaps before the episodes drop. Special thanks to our friends at Apple TV Plus for doing that. So, unfortunately, we're not able to take feedback in the moment. But if you all out there who happen to be listening have any theories that you want to put out as to anything that might be happening with Silo, if you have a thought as to what might be happening with Johns, if you have a prediction as to how Juliet is going to be in her new role, if you have something from even last week's episodes that you want to put forward out there, you have a variety of ways and means to do so. You can reach out to us on social media. You can email me if you have longer feedback, mike@postshowrecaps.com. Also, for those that are putting up the coin to be a patron of Post Show Recaps, which you become a member of anytime at postshowrecaps.com/patron to get ad-free versions of this podcast and many more, as well as access to a lovely Discord where people are having chatter about Silo and all the other shows that we are covering and beyond. Next week, we shall go beyond the down deep to see what happens with the new normal of Juliet in the Silo as the sheriff with next week's episode, Truth. Thank you all so much for listening. Take care. Bye-bye.
I want to go outside.